A BYD está com ofertas para você levar um elétrico ou híbrido novinho para a sua garagem. Vá a uma concessionária e faça um test drive. BYD, construa seus sonhos.
Olá, bem-vindos. O cara que a gente vai conversar agora chegou ao mundo encrencado, né? Porque o pai, um gigante, um semideus das telas, e lascou o nome dele já na certidão de nascimento do filho. Tá lá assim, primeiro nome, Michael, sobrenome, Kirk Douglas. Ainda assim, o menino cresceu e encanou de seguir a profissão do pai. Tinha tudo para ser nada, mas não. Afirmou-se por seus próprios méritos na história do cinema. Tem 2 Oscars próprios, como ator e como produtor. O pai, Kirk, um gênio de todos os tempos, marcou época em filmes de época. Clássicos como Glória Feita de Sangue, Ulisses, Espartacos. O filho Michael, não. Fez história encarnando personagens da modernidade. Virou um campeão da ambiguidade moral, com o financista canalha de Wall Street, o detetive drogado de Instinto Selvagem ou o desempregado assassino de Um Dia de Fúria.
Hi, I'd like some breakfast. We stop serving breakfast at 11:30.
Rick, have you ever heard the expression the customer is always right?
Pois agora, às vésperas de fazer 80 anos, em setembro agora, ele está protagonizando o primeiro personagem histórico da carreira dele, Franklin, o Benjamin, o pai fundador dos Estados Unidos, na série Franklin. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Douglas.
Petro, your wish is our desire, so.
Well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hear today's press day, a.k.a. ordeal day. How many interviews have you gone through up to now?
Well, let me see. This is my 4th day. I've got 1 more day to do. Then we have a little break. And then I fly to Cannes, France, for a presentation of the show at MIPCOM, up to Paris. Then back to New York for another week. I don't know what we're on right now, but it's a little easier when you like what you're promoting, you like what you're selling, makes it a little bit easier. And it's always happy to talk to Brazil. I was just sharing with some friends here a music video that somebody did in Brazil.
Michael Douglas one. Michael Douglas?
Yeah.
You know what the initials refer to?
Yes, I do. I didn't know in the beginning, and I was going around showing everybody, hey, look at this, this is great. And they said, yeah, MD. Yeah. I said, yes, MD. And then they explained to me the drug, so.
Yeah. But MDMA is a drug that is now being considered very helpful to treatments for post-stress disorder, and it's probably going over the counter in a few years in your country.
You made my day. I feel guilt-free.
Yes, please do. But listen, I was amazed to learn that Franklin is your first period role. You've been remarkably recognized by very modern archetypes like alpha males and the likes. But how do you turn a historical figure like Franklin in someone real?
That's a good question. A good script helps, number one. We decided, you know, first thing you do is you pull out a $100 bill and you look at Ben Franklin on the cover of the $100 bill. And you say, I don't look anything like that. I don't know. And then, you know, a few years ago, I did a show called Behind the Candelabra, which is about a guy named Liberace, who was a very flamboyant performer. And I had to do a lot of makeup for that because he was people knew him, they knew his voice, they'd seen him before, and they knew how much time the makeup took. And the producing half of my brain, even when I'm an actor, was saying, you know, we did some tests in the beginning and to try to make myself look as much like Franklin as possible. But it was going to take at least 2.5 hours of makeup and between the 45-minute drive from the hotel to the studio, putting the makeup on, 45 minutes. You would lose a lot of your production day. You would lose a lot. And I hate that situation of having to go through the makeup when they're saying, when will Michael be ready? When is he going to be ready? So we found a simpler, and also because it was 8 hours long, not a two-hour movie, we sort of decided you needed the actor's persona.
I can't do it this quickly.
You can if it serves as your livelihood. I could print 500 pages a day. But don't worry, boy. I've got other plans for you. In other words, I've been doing this for like close to 60 years. They want to see behind the makeup. They want to see a little bit of you. So we found a balance in that way, which gave me the kind of comfort and credibility that I needed to try to pull it off. And as far as the style versus today, I started, you know, I didn't want, you know, so many of these period pictures are like on a you're on a stage, you're not on a movie. It's more theatrical and they're on a stage. It's more two-dimensional. And so I think this our director, Tim Van Patten, who had a long career doing The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire, some other reality shows like that, was very helpful. And ultimately, we shot 160 plus days, and we had only two sets that we constructed. The whole rest of the show was real locations. Practical locations from the 18th century. So that all helps the reality. You know, that all kind of helps the reality. And then something like the extras. The extras were so incredible in this picture. In France, extras are not just people who don't talk, but they're all actors, so they all added so much to it. And then finally, the cast, the French cast was spectacular, was wonderful. And so together, there was a reality of what's going on, and you really felt more of a suspense story. I'm sorry, that's a long way of explaining, but...
No problem. No, we can see that at the final product. It's something really amazing, and it's fun to watch, and it's history with a capital H. And I guess you are now well acquainted with tights. You can't wait to have an opportunity to wear them again, I believe.
No, that was it. I got my legs are too skinny. I do not. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work.
A série Franklin já está disponível na Apple TV Plus. O recorte da série é o seguinte, em vez de ser a biografia inteira, o recorte é o período em que o Benjamin Franklin esteve na França. Fundamental para a história dos Estados Unidos, porque ele passou anos em Paris na companhia do neto dele, Temple Franklin, e ele era encarregado de uma missão, garantir o apoio francês, eternos adversários, rivais dos ingleses, garantir o apoio francês a nascente democracia americana. Parece que ele conseguiu, né?
As a young student, who were your favorite amongst the founding fathers?
That's a good question. When I was a young student, I mean, obviously George Washington played a part, but I would say it was probably Thomas Jefferson. I realized that Franklin was an integral part, but I knew him more as a brilliant inventor in mind, so it was probably Thomas Jefferson.
Listen, if Franklin is famously credited as the first American, and we are going through a very confusing 21st century. What is left of that quintessential Americanness nowadays in America?
Boy, that's a, well, hopefully, because of all of the chaos, and because we are talking here, and I know in Brazil you have some issues about democracy and the fear of an autocratic leader. So I'm hoping that all of this conflict that we're going through is going to be resolved positively in November in our elections. But it's also given us a good chance to remember just how fragile. I mean, democracies are so fragile, and they need to be nurtured and so protected. Autocracies are easy because, you know, there's no conflict. You know? And some people like the comfort of not having to make your decisions and everything. Democracies, you've got to make choices. And so I'm hoping, the big hope is that, no, we will not be a question of us voting every 4 years. It's the only time to show up for votes. But that we will start getting more involved in our local elections. We start dealing with our local city elections, our towns, our judges locally, because too many people sort of ignore, as poor as our voting records are, we only vote for major national elections. And I think we have to focus much more. So if we're going to change this, it's not going to change from the top down. It's going to have to change from the bottom up.
We can say, would it be correct to say that the gift for diplomacy is the main feature you share with Franklin?
Well, I think that's probably true. There's a lot of similarities between a diplomat and an actor. Diplomats inherently present themselves as charming, open, good-hearted people at peace and all this. And there's a certain performance involved in that, in the same way that actors put on a performance for a role to keep. So I think there is. I mean, the fact that Franklin had never done this before when he went to France was kind of crucial, and you know, really, they put everybody and that reality that if he did not succeed, there would be no America. I mean, it was only because of France and their support of this new country that we survived, and I think a lot of us had forgotten that.
I think the gift for diplomacy is something you've inherited from your mother.
Well, my mother, I think it probably is from my father, because I look back and I remember during the years of the Cold War, the Iron Curtain, my father worked for a government agency that sent, the one thing that we had in the West was movie stars. So movie stars were allowed to travel in the Eastern Bloc and speak at universities, and this was part of our propaganda in the West. And so I was aware of my father visiting all these different countries as an actor, but certainly as a representative for the American government. So I think that's probably where I got a sense of it, although my mother is English, and I've just always been interested in international relationships. I mean, our world, this is the thing that's so crazy right now with our elections. Our world is so interconnected, whether we like it or not. You know, globalization has changed everything. We think we know everybody else because of, you know, this little thing here, you know, exactly. You know, it translates for you, does everything. So I think it's time to go back to basics maybe and realize what our principles are. And go from there. I know my thoughts are with Brazil. They've gone through lots of moves lately. I know of your ex-president. I don't know, is he still in the Hungarian embassy? Or I haven't seen him recently.
No, he just spent two nights there, and he just said that he was having some conversations about international politics. You know, it was a pathetic excuse. But anyway, we have things more important to talk about. Listen, I was mentioning your mother opposite to your father, because as a producer, your father had the reputation of being very tough. And you of being very, well, polite. Am I exaggerating any side?
No. As far as that was my mother. She was very English. And I remember my father had an expression for her. He would call her last name was Dill. And he would call her everything is lovely Dill. Because she was very English. How are you? Lovely, lovely. Everything's wonderful. Fine, fine. Carry on is that British quality of carrying on. And yes, I that part of diplomacy, you're absolutely right. I will thank my mother for. Dad, I loved him with all my heart, but he was a tough guy. He mellowed later in his life when he had a helicopter crash and a stroke. He found religion. Became a writer and really changed the third act of his life. So I'm keeping, this year I turn 80, so I'm going to keep that in mind about what I learned from him in the latter part of your life.
Are you determined to reach and to break his record and surpass him, his 103 mark?
I don't anticipate that at all. But you have to give yourself a goal. So I said, all right, 15 more years. And so now I'm easing up. I mean, if there's a great part comes along with a wonderful group, I'm happy to do it. But I'm enjoying different parts of my life. I'm hoping to get back to Brazil again soon. The mother of my grandchildren is Brazilian, Vivian Thebes.
And your daughter, she's called Lua.
Lua.
You know what the name means
the
in
moon.
Portuguese, don't you?
The moon.
The moon. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a Lua's,
beautiful
name.
And both kids, both my grandchildren speak fluent Portuguese. So,
wow.
Yeah, because they go down, they come back to São Paulo and in Rio every year for about 6 weeks. They go back to Vivian's home and sees her relatives. And she felt it's important. And I think also that she has an ability to talk to her kids. And my son, Cameron, doesn't know what they're talking about, you know. So.
But when was the last time you were down here with Katharina?
I was in São Paulo at a convention maybe 12 years ago.
12 years
so
ago.
So it's time to
so
come
it's
back.
Time for you.
Yeah.
It's time for you to come back.
Please.
But listen, I'm talking a little bit more about the relationship between you and your father.
Right.
He at the beginning, when you were started acting, he said, Michael is not that good, but he ended up changing his mind. When did he?
He did not say, what he said was, Michael, you are terrible. He said, you are terrible. He said, and he was so happy. He said, oh, thank God. I don't have to worry about my son trying to become an actor. You know, we run at a very high unemployment issue and all of that. And I was not a natural, that's for sure. I had tremendous stage fright and very nervous. So it took me a while, but by the time I graduated from the university, I remember clearly, he said, Michael, you're okay. You're all right.
Oh.
And wished me well. It was a good pat on the back. And I miss him dearly. It's terrible how much you think about somebody after they pass away and the things you wish you said. But he was a great man, very, very, very accomplished.
I'm going to share a picture of you guys, a beautiful picture of your father and you and your brother, Joel, 1955.
Oof.
Oh, my goodness.
There we are, yeah. That's
so sweet.
That skinny little guy on the right, that's me and that's my younger brother, Joel. And I think Dad looks like he was doing the movie Ulysses. He was getting ready for that.
It's always a big shadow having a giant, a semi-god of cinema as a father and to choose the same job, the same profession. But what were the advantages of being the second generation?
That's a very good question. The advantage was watching, growing up, just when you were with my father and his friends, just like anybody else, their friends. I mean, his friends happened to be Frank Sinatra and Gregory Peck and Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh. But you got to see these stars as real people. You got to see their insecurities and realize that they were the same as everybody else. They happened to have a business that made them known throughout the world, but they were the same human beings. So I think it allowed me to control or handle both my successes and failures with a more balanced state. You know, you had much more of an image of how to behave. On the other side of that, you never wanted to embarrass, you know, your parents, especially if they were well known. So you may have tended to be more conservative in a lot of ways in your actions. And for me as an actor, you know, really, it was not until in the 80s when I did Fatal Attraction, which was a big commercial success, and Wall Street, which I won an actor for as best actor, that I felt that I stepped out of the shadow of my father, you know? So I think it takes a long time. I know there's a going around right now, there's a lot of talk about, what do they call them, newbies or second generation kids in the business, it's newbies. Like every business I know, a father or a mother tries to get their children help them in the business. They all go in, but somehow they've taken more of an attack on show business for that reason. Because
family is the first enterprise,
yeah,
humankind made up.
And our history is not very good. There's not many actors or actresses that have succeeded where their parents have. You know, there's a short. I was able to work with Jane Fonda, but that was with her father and of course, Jeff Bridges. So it was a different situation. And I think that was probably the most. And then, of course, you're just around the set when you're growing up and you see how movies are made or the behavior and all of that. But I think the big part of it was that you stayed grounded. You know, you really stayed grounded. I mean, when I talked to Dad about it, he would say, Michael, he said, my story, rags to riches, it's a big arc, it's a classical story, and it's wonderful. You're like, they think of you as the silver spoon in your mouth, and your arc is like this. I know how hard you worked, but you will never get the joy of actually making it on your own. People will always say to you, oh, it was your father, and, you know, but your father's not acting with you. He's not over your shoulder when you're working. So thank goodness I passed all that a long time ago, but it's certainly a part.
You mentioned the Oscar you've got as an actor, but you also have an Oscar for production. And I wonder what requires the most artistry, acting or producing?
Well, that's a very good question. Obviously, it depends what kind of producer you are. Are you just a financier who has the money and financing, or are you actually developing the material, you know, developing the material to a point that a director's interested? In my case, because of that television series I did, The Streets of San Francisco, early in my life, and other things, I'm much more about developments and trying to make, you know, something good. Acting, I know, I think acting is a craft. I don't think of it as artistry. If I don't do the part, I think there's at least 10 other people that can do the part very well. But I enjoy, the mix. I mean, I enjoy talking with you, like as an actor, having no vision of anything else around me, just the sole enjoyment of being selfish and just dealing with you and they deal with the problems. As a producer, you have to have a 360-degree view of everything. You have to know everything that's going on. And that makes it, you know, I find that rewarding. I call that, that's the adult side of me versus the child side. And also then I, for acting that I use it on Franklin, when we were in Paris and we had what turned out to be these spectacular French actors. They were wonderful. And you can act with them. And I'm thinking, boy, these guys are really good. Well, I don't feel threatened. I'm so happy, so excited, because the more good people around you, all I care about is how good the project is. It doesn't do me any good to have a lead or star in a bad movie. I want to be in a good, have a small part in a good movie. You know, so it works that way all right.
I hope I have time for one last question. And this question is for the UN's messenger for peace and also to the son of Isur Danielovich. We all know too well the war crimes committed by Netanyahu, but that doesn't explain what is going on amongst so-called liberals all around. Has the present tide of anti-Semitism taken you by surprise?
Unfortunately not. You know, I had no, my father is Jewish. My mother was a Episcopalian, Church of England. Up until the 1970s, unless your mother was Jewish, you were not considered a Jew. So in my schooling and everything else, I had no formal religious education and all that. And then in 1973, the Reformed movement of Judaism came in, which said that if your father was Jewish, you could be a Jew also. I admire the tribe. I am not a religious person, but I really admire the tribe and their rituals. Both of my children, or my two younger children, both chose, and I think it was because of their grandfather, both chose to get a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah. And I'm sad to see the state, but it's been dwelling for a long time. I understand the pro-Palestinian movement. I wish there'd been a little more accusatory of the Hamas political group and not simply at Israel, and realization that that's how this war started, and it's very hard to fight the enemy if they're going to stay underground behind their own people, and hopefully this will be over. And I'm very sad to see the scope of anti-Semitism, but the truth is I don't think it's ever left. I don't quite understand why it exists to the extent that it does. We're very small. We're a very, very small population. I think at last count worldwide, there's maybe 13 million, 14 million. I mean, it's nothing. So I think a lot of it has to do with their success as a race, how successful they've been. But if you're trying to, on average, eliminate a race every 100 years, probably only the smartest ones survive. You know, so I think that's probably part of the reason, but it's a difficult, unfortunate time.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Mr. Douglas.
I
hope
forward
to see you. I hope I have the chance of meeting you personally in Brazil next time you come to São
Me
Paulo.
Me too. I'm going to make it definitely have a copa next time I get down there, all right? Very nice.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
That's a deal.
Okay.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Boa noite a todos aí, companheiros de trabalho, colegas de trabalho. Boa noite a você em casa. Até a próxima.
Gostou da conversa? No Globoplay você pode acompanhar e também ver as imagens de tudo que rolou. Até lá.